Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And hey, look at that. It's an OG hostful.
OMG.
OMG?
Yeah, what's OG?
That's my response. OG, original.
A gangster.
Geeksters.
Oh, nice. Original geeks? Okay, I can live with that. Yeah, but OMG, that's so girly to go OMG.
Oh my goodness.
But, you know, I mean, geez, you know, next you're going to be putting on a little skirt and a cape and flying around.
If the look fits.
Okay, fine. I'll go along with that.
I have not tried a skirt, but if it looks okay on me, you know, I'm not one to turn away.
No, mind soap.
Nope. At least one's an episode, John.
Oh, God.
Now, the question is, would you shave the beard?
That's tough. No, I don't know if I can do that.
Okay.
I'll wear the skirt, but I can't shave the beard.
All right. You'll shave your legs, but not the beard.
Have a line somewhere. Yes.
We must be talking about Supergirl.
You clearly. Think?
Oh, yes.
What is the Supergirl of which you speak?
Supergirl is the brand new superhero show that premiered this season on CBS. And I have been watching it, and I like it.
I like it, too. I'm on the fence sometimes. I have a feeling John's not feeling it as much.
So, John,
how do you feel about the show?
How do you feel about John?
All right, fine. All right. Oh, yeah. So, how do I feel? I'm going to be a Marvel fan now. I mean, come on. Could they have thrown anything else in that first episode? They've literally blown the entire first season. For crying out loud, they gave everything away, period. It was like they thought they were going to be canceled halfway through the first episode, and they just had, like, plot diarrhea. It was ridiculous. I mean, come on.
I feel like that first episode was a setup for the season. Yes, they did a little heavy-handed in places, but they needed to establish the world that they were creating and why there was a reason for her to be, why there was something for her to deal with on a week-to-week basis.
Right.
But
yeah.
there's an art to storytelling. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. saved stuff up. Things happened that had consequences later, and everything got revealed week after week after week until you get the big reveal at the end and then the big bad or whatever. But they always have something going on that's going to mean something later. Supergirl is what I thought the CW would have, where, I mean, they're running it like a kid's show. They just revealed everything in the beginning. There was no slow buildup of anything. We already know that there are Kryptonians on the planet. We already know that one of them's her freaking aunt, for crying out loud.
Okay, wait.
They could have saved some of that.
All right, hold on. Let's back up for a second, John. All right. Because I hear a lot of nerd rage in your voice.
Nerd rage.
And we need to address that.
Fatality. Nerdality.
Nerdality. Yes. So I think before we talk about the show as a whole, you kind of have to break it down into the pieces. And one of the main things to keep in mind is the show is about Supergirl. Okay. So whether it's Superman or Supergirl, they both have the same problem as characters. And what is that problem?
The problem is that nothing can hurt them.
Right, they're indestructible. I mean, every writer that ever gets, any good writer that's ever given those books to write is always like, yeah, how do you make this character interesting? Because they're indestructible. They have no weaknesses. They can fly, shoot lasers out of their eyes. Like, you know, what can you do? And so I think they're doing a good job with how they're telling the story so far. And the other issue is you said there's no, what did you say? There's no structure to it. They're just kind of throwing everything at you at once.
Yeah.
Well, do you want another Smallville where you're waiting 10 seasons to see him in the cape and then you never actually really do? Or,
oh, come on. That's,
no,
that is,
no, we don't,
that,
want
that's
that.
A straw man. That wasn't the case here. We already were doing Supergirl. We already were going to see her in the cape. We already were going to see her catch the plane. But there was no need to introduce every single plot point in one shot. In
fact, I don't the think only they thing introduced, they miss, I don't what? Think they introduced every single plot point. I think what they did is they introduced a character who has these powers but is really unsure of herself. And that is why she falters. And I think that's the story they're trying to tell, is there's this girl who has all these powers of Superman, who came here with a single purpose, but realized, you know, because of the Phantom Zone mishap, that her purpose was that she didn't need to fulfill it. So now she lived 12 years of her life unsure who she was, what her place in the universe was, and, you know, unsure of her future. So she hid herself, you know. And now she's made a decision like, okay, I want to be a hero like my cousin, but she's got all of these things against her and she has to learn how to do it. And that's right. The story they're trying to tell.
If they had even taken 5 episodes to do all of that, the whole point of storytelling is to let the characters experience things in front of you and have time to absorb them, so that the emotion builds and the investment
right.
builds.
But
what
let
we
me...
got in the first episode was they threw everything at the wall and you literally got 6 months of emotion and stuff happening in an hour. And
okay,
so by the end of that, you're out of breath.
Let me ask you a question, John.
You don't even get a chance to absorb it.
What would you have focused on for that first episode? Just for that first pilot episode? Where would you have drawn the line?
Oh, the relationship between her and her sister. Maybe you could have come up with a little thing where she might have heard something that might have suggested her sister was into something there that she was hiding. Definitely the plane catch. Why is she revealing her secret identity to everybody in the first episode, for crying out loud? It's like she might as well just go shout it on top of a building. In fact, she kind of did.
Right.
But, you know, her relationship with Cat Grant, her relationship introducing Jimmy Olsen was okay. But then throwing in the big bad, her aunt, the Kryptonians, the DEO, who just somehow was able to intercept her as she was flying towards a fire and already know about kryptonite and nobody else seems to. And it's just, you know, there was just too much. They could have shown a lot more.
So let me make an argument with you, John. So if they had cut it where you suggested, of making it really just sort of establishing the character set, establishing her and her sister and their relationship, her workplace, and maybe her first act of heroism, saving the plane, focused an entire hour of television on just that arc, right?
Yep.
That show gets made. That show gets shopped to executives. No one buys that show. That show is not a sellable show for primetime major network television. It would not sell. It doesn't matter how well it's written.
It doesn't matter.
Mm.
They did it with Arrow. They did it with Flash.
Yes,
they
that's on the CW.
Everything in the
that's
first episode.
It's a different thing. CW is a different caliber of network than CBS. And
yes,
bear in mind, the last time CBS has had a superhero show has been 1991. That was
really?
The Flash. Yes.
Oh, they had the original Flash. Jeez.
They had the original Flash. The only other superhero shows they've ever had were The Incredible Hulk and what was the other one? Wonder Woman for a period of time. Like that is not their area of expertise. It's not something that they've done a lot of.
Well,
I want to point something else out. You know, because Ben, you made an excellent point about CBS and the stakes being higher. Supergirl was the highest rated premiere of a superhero show ever. They had 13 million viewers on their first on the premiere.
The so basically, only... that's saying 12,999,999 people disagree with John.
The no, only it just show... means that they want everybody who's going to watch that first episode, no matter what.
Listen,
it
listen.
Could have been much worse.
And the only show that compares to that was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which had 12 million. Okay, but Supergirl has had some drop off. They were at 9 million, and now they're holding it like around 8 million.
Mm-hmm.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. dropped off drastically after their premiere. And then now in season 3, they're averaging about 3.75 million. Let's see. I wrote this down. Yeah, episode 2 was 8 million, and then episode 3 was 7 million, and then I think it dropped to like 5 million. You know? So, yeah. So Supergirl started with a much larger audience and it's held on to it. I mean, I know we're only episode 4 so far.
Right.
But so far it's held on to it better than any other superhero show.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's hype though. A lot of that is good advertising, good marketing.
Right, right. But again, yeah. it goes back to CBS is a different network because again, now if we look at Flash, premiered with 4.8, Arrow with 4.14, the only other show in the realm of the other two is Gotham, sorry.
Oh, God.
With 8.21 million.
Jesus.
But they're all, you know, they're all holding it. 4.25 for Gotham, Flash is 3.5, and Arrow is 2.5. So, you know, there's the bigger the network, the more they spend on advertising.
Well, the more that airtime costs, essentially.
Exactly. So they do more to hold on to those audiences that they can. So I think, yes.
It's also a venue where they rely on viewership that's episodic. They rely on being able to catch people tuning in to a random episode, having maybe not seen any of the prior episodes, and enjoying an hour of television.
Right.
You know, the major networks bank on that heavily. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is actually sort of antithetical to that in a lot of ways, that it's become event television, you know, it's where it's got a story arc. And very few shows maintain that and are successful on networks, on the big three.
Right, right. No, but back to John's point about the premiere, I mean... That's the whole thing is they put a lot of money into advertising this and getting people excited about this. They have to have a premiere episode that has a bang that draws people in. If only one exciting thing happens and that's her saving the plane and the rest of it is setting up characters and them talking about being Supergirl, no one watches that show. Ben's right. You know.
Now I will say, John. Let me posit this. I will say that I would have more enjoyed the same hour of television stretched over 2 hours. Adding in more of that nuance, adding in a little bit more time for those things to develop and taking their time with it. I agree to that, that if it was a 2-hour premiere covering the same amount of material, it would have been better. But that aside, I think the pilot did everything it needed to garner an audience. And be a marketable show. And it was a pilot. I gave it certain leniencies because of that, because I knew that this was essentially an hour-long commercial to continue watching this show. And since then, I think that they've been a little bit more intelligent about the content of an episode.
Right. And I do agree with John on kind of on one aspect.
Is that a pity agreement or is that just
No. the telling everyone in sight that she's
Supergirl. Well, so I will make an argument with you on that point though, Dave. I do find it a little bit so it's always like one of the things that bothers me about the Arrow, for instance, is the inability is a secret identity. Like he runs around in a hoodie and formerly eye makeup and now a domino mask, and somehow nobody figures out who he is. And Oliver Queen is on television, you know, and now the Arrow has literally been on television as well, you know, in costume. So you can't even blame it on the fact that he's in the shadows all the time. You know, the Flash at least blurs his face most of the time as a cover, you know, for the fact that his mask is only so disguising. I think that for Supergirl to maintain that illusion of dual identity is going to have to rely heavily on Kara's anonymity rather than relying on people not making the connection. I think that they're not going to play that card as that hard. And I'd be happier with that because honestly, one of my theories right now is that I think that Cat Grant knows her identity. I think Cat Grant knows who she is and is keeping it to herself.
It's possible. I'm not ruling that out. I think my issue is I kind of felt like the reason she told what's his name? Her friend at the plant. At the plant. Wynn. At the
Wynn.
Wynn.
You mean Wynn? Yeah.
I was thinking yes. Daily Planet.
No, it's a Catco.
Yes, Catco. She told Wynn, and then of course Jimmy Olsen knew because of his connection to Superman. Work. And
right.
But it felt like the only reason is so that she could have her team behind her, because that's one of the tropes that all these shows have fallen into is
right, the superhero ensemble team. You can't just have a lone hero running around doing things.
And I understand you have to have conversations and conflicts and whatnot. Right. And you can't have Supergirl flying around just talking to herself. That would be crazy and boring.
Yeah.
But I mean, okay, yes, the Arrow, I can see he needs a team. You know, he has no powers. The Flash, not as much so, but okay, fine, give him a team.
Yeah.
Supergirl really shouldn't need the military behind her.
No, well, but at the same time, it's a plot point. It's part of the story arc of having, they have information she doesn't. They're the part of the, you know, it creates the understanding of where these other aliens have come from. You know, that they know that and they've been tracking them and trying to capture them. So, yes, I understand that. I agree that she doesn't need them as a team, per se. But I don't have a problem with that aspect of the story arc.
Right, right. I mean, to me, what would made more of a sense, but of course, they're not going, Warner Brothers probably won't allow this. Is if Superman was teaching her how to be a hero, you know, like that, yeah. That would make more sense, but
right.
Of course,
but that's not going to happen. And we've already sort of seen how they're flirting with that. So, I think too much, honestly, like, and I think if we want to really get into the nitty gritty of these episodes, like there was, the third episode where she's facing off with Reactron.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole episode focused on the argument that she has to set herself apart from her cousin and mm-hmm. not be in his shadow.
Right.
And, you know, and had that sort of escalate with Reactron being a villain that he wasn't able to defeat, which seemed a little far-fetched, only to have him, first of all, she defeated him in the first 5 minutes of their first fight. Second of all, the second time she got knocked down, having him swoop in and save her annoyed me a lot. Like I felt it was like hitting that nail on the head way too hard. I think they could have felt, you know, played out the same tropes of her, you know, trying to get out from under his shadow without him having to show up in a blur to save her. And then later apologize about it over IM.
Yeah, but I don't know. I understand what the writers were doing with that, so I forgive it. I mean, I understand the point of that story was, the whole point of that story was, like you said, getting out from under her shadow and her saying, I don't need Superman to rescue me.
Right.
Even after he rescues her, you know?
Yeah, and I just think that it could have been better written. Like, it's another one of those things that, like, the writing feels like it's underserved. You know, that they could have done it a little less blatantly, a little more subtly. You know, it's like trying to hammer in a nail with a, you know, with an I-beam. It's not necessary to the job.
But the other side of that, too, is they're trying to give the DC fanboys a little bit of something like, oh, look, Superman showed up for a second in the episode.
I don't want it. It's a flirtation for something they're not going to pay off. And that's what pisses me off about it. They're never going to show him, you know, in all his glory. So I'd rather they didn't show him at all. Not even the blur.
Well, I kind of hope I wonder if they're going to, because when you think about it, they're setting up the Superman they're setting up in this world is not the Superman of Man of Steel. So why not just have a different actor?
Right. And while we all have, I understand, and I am fully with you that I think that that's a viable path, but Warner Brothers has already made it fairly clear that that's not a path that they're considering. You know, they've made it very clear in their actions that they want these universes to be as clear of confusion as possible. You know, and I'm sure except, that's already...
Except for when it comes to The Flash, but anyway.
Right, well, he was grandfathered in. He was greenlit before they knew what their movie schema was. So it's damage done, and they have to deal with it. But I'm sure that it's going to become... I guarantee you that if that show is still on the air by the time the movie is coming into the theaters, there are going to be tighter and tighter sanctions on characters they can use in the show. They're going to tighten those reins, which is a shame because it could negatively influence the story. And I think we're probably going to see the same thing with Supergirl, that there's, you know, they're using the heroes that they can now, but I'm sure they have to run every single one of these stories through, you know, DC legal, you know, licensing to figure out, you know, which ones they can or cannot use and get sign off on these things. And even those sort of little appearances, they probably, you know,
I think they can get them nixed
if they show too much.
Right, but I think they can just do that. They can just explain away the whole thing with what they're doing on Flash. There are 52 parallel universes. What's happening in the movie universe is Earth 4.
Right, I completely agree with you. It's not going to happen.
Well, they're stupid. You hear that, Warner Brothers? You're stupid.
Yes, we all know. That said, though, I think the show. I think the show is solid. I've liked most of the episodes so far. I have had issues with some of them, little bits and pieces. And Dave, we've argued about some of these things over email, like the whole thing with the boat that I just thought was kind of ridiculous. Like, you know, I don't know. In that episode, I just felt like they were overreacting and automatically throwing hate at her because
she
screwed up, even though all she was trying to do was help.
But I think they were trying to make 2 points with that. The first point obviously being she's new, she doesn't know what she's doing, she screwed up, even though logically the physics of that boat scene makes no sense whatsoever. Pulling on a boat like that in the front is not going to rip the front off of it. Because they're pulled by tugboats all the time. But two, I think the other point they were trying to drive home with that, because Kat says it in the episode, is that, you know, I'm pretty sure this is what she says.
Twice as hard to get half as much recognition.
So, like, that was, they were trying to make that point. That's why one screw up and everyone hated her because she's a girl. I mean, I understand the point they're making. Yes. I understand the point they're making, but that was a very heavy-handed point to make, yes.
Well, that describes the writing for the entire series so far. It's heavy-handed. It's beating you over the head with the plot point of the week.
Right. Well, I think they need a science advisor on the show, too, because there's some things that don't add up for me as far as the physics. Like the whole fighting in the air scene. Like you're not going to use kicks and fists when you're fighting someone floating in the air. You do a full body blow. You know, you fly into someone like a cannonball. That's the way that you would fight in an air battle.
This is CBS. Have you seen Scorpion? It's a show about a bunch of geniuses, and it is the worst written.
They're morons. I know. Yeah.
They're doing stuff that's impossible.
So wait, you know the physics of a midair battle from all the midair battles you've had with John? Is that?
I know physics. I know enough physics.
No, those are the battles. Physics doesn't. Midair.
Yeah, but yes. But for instance, also in the third episode, the one with Reactron, she, you know, showed up at this scene of a car crash, and there was like that live wire in the road, which A, doesn't make any sense because live wires aren't that close to where cars drive. They put them much higher. And two, she broke its neck.
she picked up the cable and snaps it.
And all of a sudden, and drops it, and it's fine. Like, that made zero sense to me.
Right, exactly. All it would do is break the wire, and it would be a shorter wire that was sparking.
Yes.
Right, right.
But she killed it, damn it.
I think what they were trying to say is that she created a short in the cable, so it was ending there, but the rest was covering it. But, like, that's being too forgiving.
If high wire cables were wrapped in insulation, then there could be some argument that she basically broke the point of contact where two wires could be sparking with each other, but they're not. High wire cables are purely metal. They're uninsulated because there's really no point. It'll burn off the insulation anyway.
Right. Yes. Oh, I know. And I understand there's a lot of issues like that.
But when you're writing for sci-fi people, if you don't cover at least some of these bases, this is what you're going to get. We are a nitpicky culture.
But they're not writing for sci-fi people. They're writing for comic book people.
What they think they're writing for is comic book girls. And what they don't realize is that because it stars a girl doesn't mean that's the extent of their audience.
No, comic book girls are smarter than comic book boys, for crying out loud.
Maybe. I'm trying to not be sexist by agreeing with that statement. So,
touché.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't say it. Anyway, it's an interesting point though, because like you know, once you sit there and say, okay, we're going to create a superhero show that stars a girl, and I give kudos to DC for being the first one to do it, you know, when you look at it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, all this talk about needing a female superhero, and it's like, well, there you go. We've got one. She's on TV right now. Now you have to walk this tightrope that is like, well, we can't do anything that upsets the hardcore fans. We have to be PC. We have to do all of this. And again, it goes back to what Cat Grant says. Now this is going to be more scrutinized than, say, right, Flash, because it starts a woman. You know?
Maybe. I would say if they started off the Flash show and made Barry Allen, what's a female version of Barry? Barina Allen, but wrote the episodes the exact same way, you know, had the same exact story arcs, I would be perfectly fine with those stories, and I would think that show would work just fine. I don't think it would hurt the integrity of that show if they went and gender bent the characters. It might change the weight of certain scenes and certain actions, but I think you have to. To make a good show, you know, that deals with a female superhero, you have to throw away the idea that you're writing specifically to a female superhero. Yes, she's a girl. Yes, she's a superhero. Those are two different aspects that you have to deal with on their own. And I think I'm not saying they've done a bad job. I think they've actually done a decent job. Like, they haven't, you know, had her fighting with kid gloves. You know, they've actually had her use that impression to her advantage with some of the enemies she's fought and shown that she actually has the strength. But it does bother me a little bit that they've played pretty heavily on the female insecurities and those types of things as parts of the plot point of this show.
Right, right. But again, back to my original point is, I see them as female insecurities, but at the same time, like, I think it goes back to insecurities of she was sent here to be Clark's protector, and then that was taken away from her right away. So it's insecurities about who she is, which then people can easily look at this show and go, no, that's insecurities because she's a woman. It's like, no, it's insecurities about any young person trying to find their identity. You know?
Agreed. And that I'm fine with. I perfectly agree that that's a feasible route for them to go with this show. I just think if they get too heavy into weird relationship drama stuff, and like, for instance, the most recent episode, the whole sister drama. And I know, John, you haven't seen it yet. But just the that just felt like a what very...
There's plenty of sister drama already.
Yes, but the sister-mother drama. I think that that's... I think it's relatable, and I think that's what they're banking on, and it probably will float well with female audiences as something that they can relate to. But I feel like it's purposely trying to pander to those types of people, that audience. And I think that they just need to recognize our audience is broader than that.
Those type of people? You mean women?
I know. My words are failing me there for a moment. Has talk good.
I felt it felt real. So to me, that in that sense, it was done right. I can see your point of, was it necessary? Maybe not. You know, I mean, especially because when you're dealing with, you have Helen Slater coming in for an episode as mom, and so you're not establishing in the first three episodes their relationship. Now all of a sudden, boom. Here's mom, and we have to establish the whole family dynamic one episode. But not only do they establish the family dynamic, then we also change the family dynamic by the end of the episode, which you haven't seen yet.
I agree with you, Dave, that type of pushing the backstory into it. It bothers me sometimes because it basically makes it so the audience doesn't have to. I understand it. The audience doesn't have to work for the show. Like, the audience doesn't have to have backstory. But it reminds me of like the episode from The Flash from last season when Iris figured out Barry's identity because of that little shock between their hands. And but they set that up in the very beginning of the episode. You know, so you didn't have to know about that little shock identity thing prior to that episode for that to click in your head.
True, true. But I mean, I also kind of feel like they had plenty of opportunity in all the previous episodes, even if it's 30 seconds of screen time of the two sisters saying, "Oh, did you talk to mom? Yeah, she said this. Oh, she said this to me." To establish their relationship before you brought her in. You know, like, they could have done that a little bit. Then it wouldn't have felt, as John likes to say, rushed. So heavy-handed right away in your face. Like,
they're shoehorning it. They're basically shoehorning that relationship drama into the episode and giving it a background in context rather than establishing that background context over the arc of the series. It's the kind of thing that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does well. They establish that context over time. But a lot of the other shows don't bother to try to do that. They wait for the opportunity that they want to. Arrow, I would say, probably does that to the nth degree by having the whole 5-year backstory constantly ongoing. And sometimes I think too tidily fitting in with the current story.
Yes.
Very convenient at times. But you know, they at least seem to have some degree of forethought of where they want the show to go. And start teasing those things in as early as they can.
Right. And I think that's an important thing to point out, too, is that, you know, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows at this point, but those who don't realize is that it's the same showrunner for all three shows, Supergirl, Flash,
so it's all
and Arrow. You know, and of course, they're all DC Warner Brother characters, properties, And we all know they're going to tie into the same universe. So it's kind of like when you look at Arrow, you know, started, and Arrow was it was a Green Arrow show trying to be Batman. And then, you know, they finally found their feet and are trying to turn it into a Green Arrow show. The Flash from the beginning said, you know what, screw all that noise. We're a superhero show, and we're going to do the best we can to be a comic book come to life, you know. But then now Supergirl comes along, and one of the things I find interesting, I was just actually listening to Fat Man on Batman, and he was talking about it, and like the beginning of the show, right? You see the rocket ship, Superman's about to take off, and down the same track, just so happened to be their Supergirl ship, you know, and it was like, and it's like they're trying to do what they did with Flash and be like, this is a superhero show and we're going to be as true to the comic origin as we can and try to just quickly gloss over the stuff that doesn't make sense, like the Phantom Zone piece. But when you think about that origin, basically you realize, like, oh, Supergirl comes from the time in comic books where it was like, we need a female counterpart for all of our big characters, you know, to draw in female readers. So you got...
Right, let's retcon her in.
Right, so yes. Let's retcon her in and say, oh, she happened to take off at the same time that Superman took off. So now when you're looking at that as a sci-fi fan or an objective person, it's like, well, that's just kind of silly. It feels like lazy writing, and it is.
Yeah, are you telling me that
somebody else's lazy crystals writing?
The crystals that his family left, that Superman's family left, didn't mention that, oh yeah, by the way, following your ship was you know, your cousin. Did you see her?
Yes. I mean, it's kind of funny because Supergirl's first appearance, I believe, was in 1958. And of course, Superman was, what, 20 years prior to that. Yeah. And in those 20 years, Jor-El never happened to mention his cousin, you know.
Right. As your cousin should have taught you by now.
Right.
That cousin. Never happened.
What cousin?
Said Jor-El never.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, it's just, right. It's like, okay, I understand being true to the comic, but could we have just not shown Superman? I don't know. Or at least been a different building and a different takeoff site?
Right, right. At least be in some parallel different silo at some other point in time.
Right,
in
right.
Different place.
To be right behind Superman's ship just was like, oh, come on. not enough in the CG budget. So anyway, there is one other little thing that bugged me. Besides the front of the ship ripping off with last week's episode and the what's his name again?
Reactron.
And oh, you have to pull out his
the power.
Yeah,
the power core, or
the big bright thing on
the front
of his
desk. The thing
that
should have killed him decades ago, that thing?
Yes, or as I'd like to call it, the Iron Man ripoff of the...
the arc reactor.
Arc reactor.
Yeah.
But when you pull it out, it has to be encased in lead or it's going to blow up and destroy the city.
Her fist it wasn't really closed over the entire thing.
Exactly, so. like you could still see it glowing between the fingers, like, so it was still exposed to the air. So it was like,
and lead is not magical. It doesn't have some insulating properties that other elements don't when it comes to radiation. It didn't add up.
It's yet again, another thing where you gotta look at the they you gotta go ask the writers. You gotta go ask the writers, do you science much? I mean, come on.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
They need to hire someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson to be part of their crew and consult these things.
Well, I don't think they could afford that, but
probably not.
But I will say this: in the Superman mythos, lead is a mystical element.
It is in relationship to Kryptonians and in relationship to Kryptonite, but not in relationship to contemporary other elements in chemistry. Well, you know, I think anyone who has a rudimentary understanding of basic chemistry is going to see through that plot hole.
Maybe Reactron's reactor or arc reactor was fueled
by... Kryptonite based?
Right, it was fueled by kryptonite. You don't know.
Sure.
I do want to point that out. And I understand we're only four episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find it a little disturbing that the only use of kryptonite and the only time it has been mentioned was in the premiere episode, and the only people who knew about it was the DEO.
Well, it was in the second episode as well. It was actually, did it come at the, I think it was only in the second episode so far. It wasn't in the first, because right. It wasn't used against the guy with the axe, whose name I don't remember. It was used against Astra,
yep.
But it was also used against Supergirl directly in that little
So that octagon. Was right. So they used it in the first episode in those darts to take her down.
Yes, and then they used it in the second episode as when her sister knife, tried to teach her to fight.
Yes.
And then with the knife that she used against her aunts at the end of the episode.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yes. But they're the only ones.
So it's not as if they introduce it and stop talking about it. It's still there. It's just not prevalent in every single episode, much like Smallville used it over and over and over again. And I'm happy about that. I'm happy we're not having another green meteorite saga.
Yes.
Week by week, green meteorite monsters popping up all over the place.
No, we've just got
a prison convict monsters, various aliens that she has to deal with. You know, I'm okay with that because it's a reasonable plot line to work from. It's going to exhaust itself in short order, which I think they're already aware of and are having her occasionally deal with more mundane terrestrial things. Some of the time, but yeah, it's there's going to be an end point to that where the alien prisoners is going to be no longer a plot point they can rely on.
I'd just like to know why all the prisoners so far seem to all be as strong as her. I mean, they're not all Kryptonian, obviously.
It's a rough place. Well, they're all from different planets in a interconnected part of the galaxy where interstellar travel is common. In which case, you need to be a hardier version of the species to survive.
Hardier doesn't equal, like, super strength and indestructible
strength. Hold on. I also think, I see, my personal belief, and the internet can yell at me if they think I'm wrong, it goes along with Barry and his speed. Like, the Flash is fast, but he's not at his full speed yet in the show, because he doesn't realize his full speed yet. Supergirl,
yeah, but it's not like indestructibility is something you have to realize in order to use.
But your strength. Right. But when you don't realize how strong you are, you know what I'm saying? You don't hold back. You fight differently because you don't think you're strong enough.
Yeah, but we've already got the axe piercing her skin and knocking her around. The guy Reactron knocking her around like a ragdoll. I mean, you know.
The thing, the flaw I find in that argument, Dave, is the Kryptonians are powered by exposure traditionally. By exposure to the yellow sun, so she doesn't have to do anything to gain her invulnerability. Even though she's only flexing it in the current state, she should already be as invulnerable as her cousin.
But there's a difference between invulnerable and immovable as well.
Sure, and that's true. But you know, it's just saying. I think what John's saying is, you know, these people are not cutting her. Because her skin hasn't quite reached peak invulnerability, they're cutting her because they have weapons strong enough to do so. As alien species from various planets, it all seem to be as strong as Kryptonians. But I'll argue that if Kryptonians are bothering to imprison them, then they clearly have to be on par with Kryptonians. Any species that's not
They were imprisoning him on Krypton. Nobody had superpowers
because it's like the Star Wars galaxy. They interweave with each other. They're predicating this on a version of Krypton that's not purely Kryptonians. Okay. That there are species intermixing, you know, immigrating between various planets in this part of the galaxy.
Right, but if that's the case. Why isn't there a huge sign all over the universe saying, go to Earth, you'll be superpowered there?
Because it's a backwater part of the galaxy that not very many people know about.
Where you'd be superpowered.
Yes.
I mean, we should already be inundated with, illegal aliens and not the kind from our home planet.
It's a long and treacherous trip because not very many people have made it.
Right, but this kind of parallels other TV series is like, a good example is a legend of her was the legendary journey of Hercules it is a TV series a while back. And one of the problems they had in the first, and I think it was the second season as well, was Kevin Sorbo got pissed off because they were like, it was lazy writing. Somebody walk up behind Hercules and take a branch and boop, bop him on the head and he's out cold. And they intermixed that with other things where people were throwing boulders at him and he was just knocking him out of the air. And I forget exactly what happened, but I think one of the writers or maybe the showrunner was canned, and they started doing it where, okay, He's Hercules. If you hit him over the head with something, it better be, you know, it better be an I-beam, else he ain't going to feel it. He's just going to turn around and knock you around. The same thing goes for Supergirl. It is completely lazy writing. You already know you've got this character that is going to be hard to write for, but don't be lazy and insult everybody's intelligence by having somebody walk up, by having everybody be superpowered, because that just makes everything else ridiculous. It just makes more trouble.
Well, true, but also they haven't established, that is something, they haven't established what exactly is her power level in this show. You know, I mean, every incarnation of Superman has had different power levels, to the point where in the 70s he was so superly, ridiculously strong he could move a planet, and
right.
And then when they retconned it after Crisis, you know, he was strong, but not that strong anymore.
Right, and there were so many different points in the, 80-odd years of his history, or 75-plus years,
right,
where his powers vacillated in all different directions. Like, he wasn't nearly as powerful when they started the comics. He couldn't even fly in the first versions of the comics. But they kept adding new powers and coming up and making up ridiculously different odd powers that he had over time that they've since abandoned and ignored. But it's gone all over the place because writers like to introduce new things and make their mark. And
just like at one point they had pink kryptonite, which made Superman gay. I mean, come on. I mean,
right.
If it's I don't remember, which we all know
is the most fabulous version of Superman possible.
I'm just saying that, right, when you have 75 years of history for a character that's indestructible,
you're going to make some weird left turns.
Yes, exactly.
So what you're saying is that at some point she's going to rip the emblem off her chest and throw it at somebody and have it unwrap them.
Hey,
when I was a kid, I loved that episode.
When I was a kid, that made perfect sense.
But her suit isn't a Kryptonian suit; it's homemade. So if she rips that emblem off the shirt, they're going to have to go to a commercial break instantly.
So
that's like a Miley Cyrus moment, right?
Well,
there.
And that's another thing. Okay, I will say that is a physics thing that's really bothering me in the show. Like, yes, the cape is Kryptonian and indestructible, but her suit isn't.
Did you hear?
She should be having Spider-Man moments all over the place.
Oh my god! Exactly. But
did you hear what he said? What they said? Like, I mean, here again, the problem with the first episode was everything went so fast. So they went through all these iterations of the suit so fast. And I think at one point, well, I think he said it, the cape, but you can assume that he made the rest of the suit out of some kind of poly, whatever. But where the hell did Wynn get the materials to put that together? And also, I'd like to know what college Wynn went to that taught him at the same time journalism and computer hacking.
Well, he's the IT
journalism,
guy.
Computer hacking, and seamstress skills.
Yes, and seamstress. Yeah, right.
He's the IT guy. He is not a journalist.
Yes, the IT guy. Oh, that's right. He also knows about radiation levels because he was able to tap into blah, blah, blah and figure out the radiation levels of the city and blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, you're a developer, and you know a lot of nerdy stuff, John. So come on.
No, it's not just nerdy stuff. It's lazy writing.
None of these shows are innocent when it comes to that type of writing.
Yeah, but to have that much in the first episode, come on.
Felicity Smoke is just as bad as Wynn. I'm sorry.
Exactly. Every single week.
Just to hack into anything.
There's a difference. There's a difference. She's hot.
Okay.
Right, okay. And
but besides that, she went
but
to
what
school
about
for it. That was her thing of being. Her thing is that she is a certified genius. That's her thing. Wynn is a freaky. He works at what? As a copy? But what is he? I don't even know what he is. But he's a journalist.
IT guy.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Yeah, he's an IT guy. We're all IT guys. Do you guys know how to scan for radiation?
Yes, but also
you do.
The character.
I can figure it out.
Winslow's shot in the comics is Toy Man. So
you think they're leading in the direction that eventually he'll have, out of jealousy, rebel against her and become a bad guy?
I wonder. I mean,
he's too adorable to do that.
I mean, you have
adorable.
You have you have Caitlin Snow and Cisco Ramon on Flash, and Cisco is becoming Vibe this season.
Yes.
And they have hinted at Killer Frost At least
who's coming
although
from
they've also Earth hinted 2. Away from it. I'm curious about that, but we'll see how that plays out. Because they basically, what is it? Wells ran his little metahuman scanner across the room, and she came up clean.
Right. Well, the prevailing theory right now is that she'll be Killer Frost from another dimension.
Alternate, yeah, in like Earth 2 or something like that.
Right. But I am kind of curious because we have him as Toy Man and, of course, Hank Henshaw, the guy from the DEO.
Mm-hmm.
We all know who he is in the comic books.
Yep. He's Hank Henshaw.
Very good.
He's Cyber Superman.
Cyborg Superman. Yes. We all remember the Reign of the Supermen. Right,
I remember it well. Yes, the Man of Tomorrow.
I had to use the shop vac when that happened.
No, he wasn't. Which one? They each had a label. He was the Man of Tomorrow. There was Superboy. There was the Man of Tomorrow. There was the
Steel.
The
Man of Steel, which was Steel.
Last Son of Krypton,
which was
Eradicator. Yeah, there was the Man of Steel. Right, Eradicator was the Last Son of Krypton. So yeah, they each had. They basically took one of the
books.
You know. One of the book names as their moniker.
Yes, yes. So, which then ended to become one of the most convoluted backstories and one of the longest running characters from that from that series. So it'll be interesting to see if they go that route. They've already kind
of... And I think they're hinting at him not necessarily being on the level and having ulterior motives and having abilities, obviously.
Right. Oh, you have
to... Well, he's already a cyborg. He already knew that she was messing around with the computer just while he was standing in the middle of the hallway.
And his eyes glowed red.
Yes. Right. Which, you know, it's funny. I read something where someone pointed that out and said, you know, I think they're trying to bring Martian Manhunter. And he's like, do you know anything about the comics? Like, he doesn't have to be Martian Manhunter. He clearly already is someone. Just know your geek cred.
Well, that's like trying to turn... why can't I think of his name? What's his face into John Stewart?
Diggle.
Diggle, yeah. Trying to turn Diggle into John Stewart. It's like, no!
Just let him be who he is.
Yes, yes. You know, all because... You know what really ruined it? It was the stupid Dark Knight Rises. When, my given name is Robin.
Oh, geez.
But no Robin was ever named
that
Robin.
That was so dumb. Right. That was completely... That was just...
It made me sad.
Ridiculous.
It made me so sad.
Yeah.
No. If he said, my given name was Dick Grayson, like, okay, fine. Or Jason Todd or any of them. Right. I would have been like, all right, I'll accept it.
Right. My given name is Batman.
Yes, and once you finish watching tonight's episode, they delve into that a little bit more, too. So... Hank Henshaw, not someone being named Robin.
Right. Well, I'm glad that they don't delve into that area. So yeah, I think what we're getting at here though is that we have mixed feelings. I think it's generally a good show, and I'm going to give it. I'm going to keep watching it. It's not Gotham bad yet. It's definitely in caliber with Arrow and Flash. I think it's at that level. And I like the fact that they have fights during the day. You know, it's a distinguishing factor that I can appreciate.
Right, right. I think as long as we don't have... we don't have her go, oh no, I can't do this, what would Jimmy think? Or anything, any kind of that BS, I'll keep watching. I like what they're doing with the character. I think... They're doing a good job of a modern take. They're being true to, you know, the character they've established and that they're trying to work through. I think, again, the story arc is her, this season anyway, is her finding her place in the world, you know, and she'll feel like a fully realized hero by the end of the season, however that might play out, I hope, anyway. And, just as long as they fix those physics issues, I'll be up.
Right. They need a physics consultant. That's all I'm saying. A physics consultant, maybe an electrical engineer, you know, a couple different scientific disciplines represented.
Maybe just somebody knows some of the earth sciences. I mean, you know, just, you know, maybe some middle school
science. They don't have to be full-time. Just they can share them across those different shows because, you know, The Flash could use some of that too.
Right. I mean, it would have been more believable if when she pulled the boat, she accidentally hit it into the dock and broke part of the dock or something. Like, that would have been better. Yeah. But the front of the boat ripping off made no sense. Sorry.
Yeah, it didn't really make sense. It's much thicker metal. There's really no... That doesn't make any... It didn't make any sense. That's actually one of the thickest parts of a ship, is the metal in the prow.
They're made to be pulled by tugboats.
I don't know. I think the breaking the neck of the power cord, that should be left in, because that almost makes it a parody.
Well, yeah. there was a parody. There was no Zod in the episode to have his neck
broken. But first, right, she broke the neck. Yep. Maybe that was an Easter egg. Look, I can break a neck too.
It was Supergirl Zod, the electric wire.
So she broke the neck of a ship and a cable.
Twisted it right off.
And an arc reactor.
Yes.
So there you go. That's
breaking necks all over the place.
Just like her cousin. Yep. So you're gonna give it a more of a chance, John. If we can
The only reason I'm continuing to watch is, one, hopefully it'll get better, but two, actually, which is more important than one, Benoist is good. This is her role. I think she's
shining.
I thought he was going to go, she was hot.
No. What do I look like? A Republican? Ooh.
Well, John.
Seriously, I think she's really good for the role.
I think she's embodying the role well. I better than I could have expected necessarily. I think that she's doing a great job. I think if there are any flaws, it's the same kind of flaws that a lot of these shows have, and that's that they need to notch up the writing a little bit and check their, you know, physics a little bit. But other than that, I think it's great.
Yes. I mean, you know, some of the criticisms I've seen aside, like our friend Dustin put on our Facebook page, you know, oh, she'll just have somebody else rescue her.
Oh boy.
It's like, you know, come on, give it a chance.
No.
You know, I think
it comes from a society where those gender lines are don't exist, where they don't treat women as the weaker sex, and therefore she doesn't have the mentality. She grew up with that Kryptonian mentality for 12 years, and it's clear that she, you know, doesn't buy into that backwards earthly mentality.
And that mentality will crack your neck in a second. I mean,
the one thing though that threw me for a little bit of a twist is I think it was in the pilot when there was a thing, some sort of thing that her sister gave her that was with, you know, on her ship, and she recognized the language and referred to it as Kryptonese.
Okay, yeah,
like,
that is...
why wasn't it Kryptonian? Like, what?
What does it have to do with biology? I mean, or what? Knees? I mean,
Kryptonese.
I mean, it was interesting. There were two things that were given to her in that pilot episode. There was the Kryptonese, and yes, the cape from her cousin. Yeah.
Right. And it's a very durable cape.
Yes.
Very, very durable. So she really needs to be careful with it.
Right. Because, I mean, if she's not too careful, it could get caught in a door.
That's true.
Yes. So, on that note, boys and girls, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn. Okay, what are you doing? Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh. Well, there are better ways to join the conversation. Really? Like what? Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest. Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google+? I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book videos, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list. Cool! Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic? Nope, I'm gonna try to answer the Stump the Key question. Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl?
That's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. Memphis Lives!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's gonna get caught in the door.
Ow.